Martha was very composer friendly. Composers liked her. She understood music and made it easy for composers to work with her as a choreographer. So it was a very pleasant relationship that they had. And I think Aaron would have probably written the ballet for free, because at that time, Martha was the premier choreographer and dancer, you know, in the United States at that time. So composers were really anxious to work with her.
And she cast her husband as the lead role in mm-hmm. this.
Yeah. And Merce Cunningham played the preacher. Everyone who was anyone almost kind of passed through Martha's company at one time or another, because she really was the preeminent modern dance choreographer.
When this premiered, was it received with positive critical acclaim?
Right away. It hit a home run right off the bat. It was the right piece at the right time. You realize we're right in the middle of not just a war, but a world war. And by the time it was premiered, everyone was so war-weary at that point that it just seemed to speak to people right off the bat. And there was something about the simplicity of the music and the simplicity and utter Americanness of Martha's story that she was trying to tell, that it just touched people right off the bat.
This was called Ballet for Martha?
Yeah. Well, they had gone back. I mean, part of that correspondence back and forth from Martha here and Aaron down in Mexico was trying to come up with the storyline for it. And it really went through a lot of changes. And Martha, that's how she worked. And then, you know, so Aaron, finally, Aaron said, well, if you kind of give me timings on this, you know, I can sort of write a music that feels like what I think you're getting at with this part. By the time he finished it, there was no title for the... I mean, it had gone through various kind of working titles, but Aaron just decided on his manuscript to just call it Ballet for Martha, you know, and wait and see what she finally ended up calling it. Aaron took the train back from Mexico and arrived here in Washington just as they were in the middle of dress rehearsals for this, and kind of ran up from the train station and ran into the hall as they were taking a break, and they were talking, and he asked her, he said, by the way, Martha, what'd you end up calling our ballet? And she said, oh, I'm going to call it Appalachian Spring. And he said, what a pretty name. He said, does it have anything to do with the ballet? And she said, no, it was just a poem I read by Hart Crane. And so Copeland used to joke for years that people would come up to him after hearing the music or seeing the ballet, and they'd say, oh, Mr. Copeland, when I listen to your music, I can just see the Appalachians, and I can just smell spring. And he said, once the royalty check started rolling in, he said, I started to see the Appalachians and smell spring myself.
But, you know, it's set in Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm. Which is where Martha's from, of old Pennsylvania pioneer stock. I always find it interesting, is here's our quintessential American composer. Here's the guy who seems to define, you know, the Western expansion of the United States, the prairie, you know, cowboys. And here he is, this nice Jewish boy from Brooklyn, who grew up in Brooklyn, was a first-generation American, and like so many Americans of his generation that were, you know, the first, you know, their parents being immigrants and stuff. And I'm thinking like the Gershwins. I'm thinking like Irving Berlin. You know, these great iconic American composers. I think as first-generation Americans, they wanted to be more American than regular Americans. And Copeland was able to do that. I mean, he was really able to capture, you know, the American sound. And I always say, you know, if you ever made a movie about what it's like to be an American and show it to someone, you know, who is an American, it would have to have a soundtrack by Aaron Copland. I think it's a fascinating story. Here you have the quintessential American composer, and by the 1950s, the National Symphony wants to play his Lincoln portrait, you know, the great American piece of music. And by that point, we're right in the middle of the McCarthy era, and a congressman says, we're not having music by that communist Aaron Copland played. and they banned his music. And Aaron Copland was brought before the Committee on Un-American Activities and suffered for that. And he was no more a communist than I am. I always think it's fascinating that someone we think of as our most American composer was treated so poorly that way.
Because he is thought of as the quintessential American composer.
Is, yeah. Arguably the most recognizable.
Yeah.
I think, you know, if you play his music anywhere in the world, probably two composers, him and John Philip Sousa are probably the two most recognizable American composers we have, and maybe the most beloved, too. I've never met anyone that doesn't, when you hit the Simple Gifts tune in Appalachian Spring, that you always hear sort of a collective sigh. The person that is important in this whole equation here is a woman named Elizabeth Sprague Coolidge, and she's quite rightly called the fairy godmother of American chamber music. And she was a wealthy woman from the Boston area that her husband passed away young, and her mother died the same year, and she decided to devote the rest of her life to promoting new music. And that foundation found a home here in the music division at the Library of Congress. And when she said she wanted to put on concerts here, we said, that'd be lovely. We'd like to do that, but we don't have a concert hall. So we actually had to get a bill signed by Congress to let someone donate money to the federal government so that we could build a concert hall here. And that's the concert hall and stage where Appalachian Spring was premiered, here in the Library of Congress.
No relation to Calvin Coolidge.
No, but she, even in her lifetime, people always asked her that.
Everything you hear on WRTI is made possible by members. Please join today.